get the property stabilized, get it rehabbed, get a renter in it, go back to the bank and say, listen, I want to use this improved asset value to cross-collateralize and do a construction-to-perm loan on this lot. And then when that one's built, I want to cross-collateralize again and do a construction-to-perm on the next lot. So you guys can build yourself a little three-house portfolio right there, and then when that's done, go a mile down the road and build your fourth one. Because it sounds like you're more interested in building generational wealth than you are making some quick cash right now. Is that accurate?
Exactly. That's exactly what I'm looking for.
Yeah, so right there. I think I would move in the direction of keeping the lots, because it's going to be difficult to sell a lot in this environment.
Welcome, successful realtors and investors and real estate agents, because not all realtors agents are realtors, nationwide. Today is Thursday, May 14th, 2020, and this is Mastermind Call number 278. We have about 8 people in the queue, so let's jump right in with our first caller. First up this week is phone number ending in 5908. You're up first.
Hey, so this is Deb. My question has to do with North Carolina specifically. I've recently learned that real property passes, from one person to another outside of probate. And I've also read some things that basically say that the executors are not supposed to be paying for things like utilities, lawn service, et cetera, out of the probate estate. So I wanted to see if you guys have any insight in North Carolina being different than the other states, and if there's any, things that we can do as far as, advising the personal representatives, or if that impacts our strategies as far as, trying to purchase the properties. So
Bruce is our coach, and he's in the Raleigh market. I'm gonna let you take that on, Bruce.
And, of course, Bruce is calling back in. He's gone. He was the one chattering. Oh, no, I see you. Bruce, you're here. Can you take that one, Bruce? Let me unmute him. Bruce, can you speak now?
Yeah, I was calling back in, and I only caught part of the question. Could you repeat it?
Yeah, we have a subscriber from North Carolina that had a North Carolina-specific question. Would you repeat that, Deb?
Sure. So it's kind of two parts. So one is, I've heard that the property transfers outside of probate. So, and I've heard that North Carolina is the only state where that's the case. So I didn't know if that changes anything as far as, because, I think we've been told, market to the attorneys and to even to the personal representatives and be like, yeah, I understand you have to, sell the property in order to close the estate. And I don't think that that's the case in North Carolina. And then my other question was about, I've also heard that paying for things like lawn care, even mortgage, like that it should not be paid for out of the estate because, the property and the estate are, completely separate sort of entities. So didn't you guys have any information to elaborate on that whole situation with North Carolina?
Yeah, that hasn't been my experience. My experience is that yes, we can sell the property while it's still in the estate, and then the proceeds just go into the estate and get settled out. So it could be that the attorney that was working on this particular probate did transfer it out. It's possible that that was just the individual attorney. So in the closings that I've had, I have had the estate pay for lawn care, pay for cleanouts. So I'm not sure where that North Carolina specific information came from. Was that from an attorney?
Yeah, I'm getting it actually off of an attorney's website. And then the other part was also from the clerk. I called the clerk and talked to him, and he a couple of times said, you know, well, keep in mind that the real estate passes outside of probate in North Carolina.
Yeah, we've passed it inside of probate. Which county is this?
Wake.
It's in Wake? I have passed real estate inside of probate in Wake County. Chad, have you had anyone with a different experience in Wake?
No, it's my understanding is it's not really any different in North Carolina. I have not closed a deal in North Carolina myself, but we have several customers there, and we have for years. I think what they may be talking about an exception. So if it's a surviving spouse situation where they held title as tenants in the entirety, especially with rights of survivorship, there's basically a transfer on death clause that will help they can avoid the asset. That asset won't be part of probate because it has a contractual transfer. However, regardless of that, all the variables are pretty much the same. Whether the probate's inside or out, the motivation variables are still there. So the property holding costs, the maintenance issues, the personal property struggles. We know that statistically, regardless of how title was held, like statistically, senior citizens hold 80% of them own real estate, and 80% of their net worth is in that real estate. So even with a trust is not in any way associated with probate, none of the assets, but the family still need the same service because they need to liquidate assets for the top to maximize equity and minimize stress. So even if, like in states like Texas, they have a provision called monument of title that will let you carve the house, adjust the real estate out of the estate, but it's still, people are still super motivated to sell. So in my experience, I mean, it can be done inside of probate. I'm guessing they may have been discussing an exception with you. But regardless, the motivation is still there. All the social aspects of this situation don't really change, even though the legality may.
Go ahead. Since I'm in the Triangle market as well, send me an email at bruce@alltheleads.com. And I'll get with the couple of the few estate attorneys that I work with, and see if they're hearing anything like that. But I've personally sold probates inside of the estate, so I'm not sure exactly what they're talking about. I'll ask a few of the attorneys I have and respond to you.
Okay, perfect. Thank you so much.
All right, familiar name up next. Phone number ending in 6248. You're up next, Joyce.
Good morning. I have a quick question. In making my calls, I have run across a person that has Google Assistant answer their phone, and I've not encountered Google Assistant before, and I was just wondering if you could tell me about that and if I should leave a voicemail with Google Assistant or what?
I'm not sure either. I don't have any. I've never used Google Assistant. That's an AI-driven. You're probably calling a software developer. I don't have any experience working with it, so I don't know what advice to give you. But, I mean, if they've built a tool to receive their voicemail, then yeah, I would recommend. What probably happens is you leave them a voicemail. It has an if this then that process that it does something with that voicemail. So it probably transcribes it, sends it to their assistant or something like that. But I would, if you know, just if it's, I don't think there's any risk in it. Like if you hit that again, just leave a message and see what happens. It might be an interesting learning experience.
Okay, thank you.
Very good. We have a small group in the queue today, guys. We've got four more, and there's plenty of room. We got a good turnout on the calls, so don't be shy. Hit *6 and hit 1, and you'll be up next. In the meantime, is phone number ending in 0727. You're up next.
How's everyone doing? This is Jonathan Hawkins, originally from Dallas, Texas.
How are you guys doing?
Great, John. How about you?
I'm doing great, doing great. All right, so I have a couple of questions. First question I want to bring to the forefront is of a property that my mom and dad owned, and my father's now deceased, mother's now remarried, and she has she and her new husband have purchased a new home, and the old home was just sitting there, her old properties, four of them, to be exact, is just sitting, you know, and three homes have been cleared away off the property, and the house that we grew up in is there. And she said, you know, you guys should really do something. This is your inherited property. You know, when I pass, it'll be yours. You should really do something with it. And so I said, okay, not a problem. Here's my plan. I just want to make sure, I want to bounce it off Chad and the rest of you guys to make sure that I'm in alignment. My plan is to actually take the property, have her deed it over in, into a land trust, have the attorney, have the attorney be the trustee. So my brother, my sister, and I would be involved with that. And we would then get some equity out of the home, fix it up, and then lease it. Am I, is that the path I should go?
Yeah, that sounds good. I mean, are you guys going to put your, you said get some equity out of the home. So do you, are you thinking you're going to refinance it before construction?
Yes.
Okay, so then the only hole in your plan is probably the land trust. Community banks sometimes will understand land trusts and be comfortable with them, but most lenders won't actually do a cash-out refi unless you roll the title back over into an entity or a person's name. So the only fault that I can find in your strategy is that the land trust may cause you issues on your refinance. So the other thing I want to clear up, when your father died, your mother probated the estate.
When they were divorced, well, they were divorced when he passed, and so, no.
Was his estate probated?
No, he,
okay, then you're going to, that means his,
small
that
means,
oh, okay, so he got the small estate exemption.
Uh-huh, right.
Okay, so title has transferred from your father to your mother.
Correct.
And your mother is offering to quit claim the deed to you, so you guys can go do something with it.
That's correct.
Yeah. So other than I would probably, because you're relying on a cash out refi for your rehab budget, probably just form an LLC with your siblings.
Uh-huh.
And because it's going to be a rental property, that's the easiest way you guys get the most legal protection. So form a Texas LLC with each of you as 33 owners, and have an attorney write the operating agreement, and then go open a bank account for the LLC. Each of you can fund it with $100 each or whatever you choose to. Get yourself an EIN number for that, because if this works well for you, you guys may want to use that company. You may want to use the profits from this property to buy the next property, right? Or the equity in this property to buy the next property.
That's exactly what I was thinking. And okay, so even though my brother and I are in Texas, the property is in Mississippi. Have you ever dealt with Mississippi before? Is it about the same, you think?
Yeah, I think most of the southern states are pretty easy to deal with. This is not that complicated. So, I mean, you've got a good strategy. I think the land trust will give you an issue on the refi. If you're going to refi through a community bank, they may be okay with it, because if they work with real estate investors, they understand that's a common tool. They just don't like it because they can't see your assets. If you default, it's hard for them to find you and come after you. That's why they don't like them. So 90% of the time, the bank will make you roll the asset out of trust, and you can always close in the LLC name, get it refinanced, and then roll it back into the trust, and they will probably never know. But you have an LLC, you have the protection of the LLC anyways, so you probably don't need that if it's just for a single property.
Okay. Hey, John, you mentioned, I think I heard you say there was three other buildings or structures on the property at one time. Were they on separate lots, or was just all four of them on one lot?
The main property had, it was the main property and then two smaller rental properties beside it, and then there was another property about a mile away across the street from my grandparents' house. And see, three of those structures have just been wiped away because they were, you know, they were old and got the, I left Mississippi, my brother and sister did too, my parents got older, and so then you have deferred maintenance until the fact that the houses just weren't any good.
Yeah, my thought was if two of those, if the other two were on individual lots, you might be able to sell the lots off and use that as capital to, you know, to work on the house. If they're all in the same lot, that probably wouldn't apply. But you might want to look into it and see how many building lots you have there. Is it one or is it three?
We can actually put, there are two other lots that are beside the house, that are beside the
right.
main house. That we can potentially even still build a house on if that was the case.
Right.
And then there's another property that's a mile away that's just red clay dirt. There used to be a property there. It's just red clay dirt. It's just nothing. That one probably could be sold.
Do you still have where the other three properties were on the adjacent lots? Was it well and septic or was it public utility?
Public utility.
Okay. So... I think what I would suggest, rather than selling the lots, what I would suggest is get the quit claim, do a light cash out refi, don't take any more money than you need to do your construction, get the property stabilized, get it rehabbed, get a renter in it, and then go back to the bank and say, listen, I want to use this improved asset value to cross collateralize and do a construction to perm loan on this lot. And then when that one's built, I want to cross collateralize again and do a construction to perm on the next lot. So you guys can build yourself a little three house portfolio right there. And then when that's done, go a mile down the road and build your fourth one. Because it sounds like you're more interested in building generational wealth than you are making some quick cash right now. Is that accurate?
Exactly. That's exactly what I'm looking for.
Yeah, so right there. I think I would move in the direction of keeping the lots because it's going to be difficult to sell a lot in this environment, but it sounds like they'll serve your family better long term. So build the equity up in the one you're being given and then use that to collateralize your next one and then use that equity cross collateralize the next one and the next one. And by the time you get done with those four, you guys will realize you never want to be a landlord again or you're ready to go out and start doing this, you know, bigger.
Well, you know, of course, you know what? I am open to a lot of different things right now, but I do want to do better with what we were given. So I want to build on that. And generational income, generational wealth is also on the mind front for, you know, and I'm the oldest, so I have to show my brother and sister how to do this. So.
Yep. You know, great idea, man.
Like you're on track, man. You've got a good strategy.
Yep. All right, next up is phone number ending in 4361. You're up next.
Well, it's complicated stuff you guys are doing today. I just a simple question.
Okay. We have simple answers also, no problem.
Yeah, well, makes me feel inadequate that I didn't understand the answer, let alone the question. Now, I'm very excited. I actually got my first good lead yesterday. I was thrilled about it. And I've been, you know, out of the hospital a while and I've been developing some phone calls and I'm getting into a routine. I'm happy about it. But I did run into a call. I had a very good exchange. You know, you feel good about the call. But it was a living trust situation. And I probed around for other, you know, referral possibilities. But really, there's not much you can do when somebody's got a living trust and they're going to live in the house. I think.
No.
So I'm calling in to see what I missed.
Well, if they have a living trust, they most likely already have a financial services professional. And if they plan to just stay in the property, I mean, maybe you can connect them with, you know, with some of your vendors, like for lawn services or, you know, just maintenance issues or contractors. But there's not a whole lot you can do there. Some people just don't need our help. Some people are very proactive and have proper plans in place, and they don't have any motivation or urgency because they took care of that years ago.
Tim, you certainly could put them in your sphere of influence and just treat them like a past client, or, you know, sphere of influence and just contact them occasionally, see if anything's changed, because the situation will change eventually.
Well, what confused me is I'm making a phone call based on people who have been named a probate representative.
Right.
Well, and if they had a living trust, which I had with my dad, we had that when my dad died. That was great. Just switched signatures and took over. Well, what would be the reason for the probate?
They didn't properly fund the trust. So either something was left out when they funded the trust, or they purchased something in the after the trust was funded and forgot to title it and fund it over into the trust. It's very common. I mean, like Walt Disney's family did this, and they're still fighting over something. Steve Jobs had this as part of his estate. There's several high-profile, you know, very wealthy people who they'll set up a trust maybe in their 40s, and 20 years later they just, you know, on a whim go out and buy an airplane or an RV or something that's above the small estate exemption value, and that one asset triggers probate it has to be probated. Everything that was properly funded into the trust does not have to be probated, but whatever it was that wasn't properly funded in has to be probated.
And what do they do? Just confirm that the guy had the asset and doesn't owe any money? What is it for?
Yeah. Well, I mean, they'll have to go through, you know, the whole process. So let's just say it's a retirement account. It's like an annuity that didn't have a transfer on death. And they didn't know about it. Dad forgot about it. He passed away thinking everything was fine, which is usually the case. So that annuity is for $250,000. The trust has paid all the bills and continue to do that, but because that annuity is higher than the small estate exemption, that means that that has to be probated. So the list of heirs, the list of assets, the only asset that would be listed would be that annuity. everything else is in the trust. They would have to publish, leave it sit open for 4 months, and then go close it up with the final accounting. So it would be efficient process, but it would still take a minimum of 4 months because it would require that notice to creditors to be open. Now, in theory, the trust has probably been paying the bills and has already settled all the liabilities, so it's likely that none of those creditors would actually file against the probate. But if they do, that $250,000, some of it would be used to settle those liabilities outside of the trust. But it's going to delay them. They're going to have to go through the motions and have at least be involved for 4 months, just for that whatever was left out of the trust.
Okay.
Thank you much.
All right. Next up is phone number ending in 8213. You're up next. Are you there? 8213. Looks like a Maryland,
hey,
number
guys,
three.
How are you?
There you are. Good. How about you?
Los Angeles. How are you? All is well.
Okay.
Thank you. Sorry, I muted myself. My apologies.
No problem.
One quick question regarding the next probate mastery. Do you guys know when that's going to take place?
I'm looking at the last that we've been running on a schedule the last week. I haven't trying to get a calendar in front of me. That is the, I'm looking at the 25th, 6th, 7th.
Okay, cool.
And
because I'm trying to, I did it last month, but I'm trying to get an associate of mine on board, and I told him about it. I said, look, you got to get into this. So Is he allowed to sign up if he's not part with all the leagues, or does he need to be a member first in order to sign up to Mastery?
No, he can sign up for Mastery first. A lot of people do. So if he signs up today, if he signs up now, we'll send him the recordings from the class you were in, and then he can get started. He can get started and go at his own pace if he would like, or whenever we register the sessions, he'll be registered in for the live sessions. But the day he signs up, he'll get the recordings from the previous class.
Okay, so then I can just have him call all the leads and then request the sign up, because I see online it doesn't give the new dates yet. So maybe he could just call.
He can still use that button. He can use that button and sign up, and it'll go ahead and send him. He'll get everything.
Okay, cool. And then my other question is, I got my letter done to send to the attorneys. I'm just wondering, am I cool to just send this one out first and just kind of get the ball rolling, because I don't really want to be waiting too long, instead of also having all my other letters ready? Because I was told when I spoke to someone on the phone that I should have, I think, at least a follow-up letter as well. I don't have that ready, so I figured maybe I just get this one out first, get the ball rolling with the calls, and just kind of get my feet wet with the prospecting and all that stuff, and then move forward. What are your thoughts as coaches?
Done's better than perfect.
Okay. Cool. All right. Thanks. I really appreciate you guys.
All right. Next up is phone number ending in 6338.
Hi, guys. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. That's Chad, right?
Yeah, it's Chad.
Hey, Chad.
Quick question. Hey, guys. I'm calling the leads that are provided, and I'm bumped up against the same scenario a couple times, and I don't know if it's a one-off or what, but the first question has to do with the personal representative that I called didn't know there was even a probate filed. It's happened twice. He said, yes, I know the deceased. In one case, it was my husband, but there shouldn't have been probate filed. And I'm wondering if this is a common thing, or was this just a fluke? What do you think the situation was there?
What market are you in?
California.
So the personal rep was the person, like it was the Jane Doe you were trying to reach, right? She verified that she was married to the John Doe that was deceased.
Yeah, that's right.
And she wasn't aware that, and she was listed as the personal representative.
Right. So she was aware there was a death. She was aware that there was a living trust. She was aware of the attorney that was involved that was listed. But she said that attorney should have never filed probate. I don't understand why they filed probate.
There was a trust. And so this sounds like what we talked about earlier. Whoever formed and funded the trust left something out. And the attorney went ahead and did what he knew needed to be done and probably didn't properly communicate that with her. So she's administrating a trust, and now her attorney has initiated a probate because it was necessary. And he probably just didn't communicate that to her.
Yeah, that's kind of what I figured, and I told her that's what I thought was happening. I just wouldn't. So apparently you could be named as a personal rep and not even be informed. In other words, she didn't sign anything saying that she agreed to it. She was
right.
Named.
Okay. So that's why I was looking for details. I've seen this happen in Colorado where real estate investors from Arizona were actually filing probate for estates and naming like surviving spouses as the personal rep. And our people called them and they're like, what are you talking about? Yes, he died. I haven't done anything. And they just freak out, and rightfully so. And what we found out is actually the petition was submitted from Arizona into Colorado. The clerk accepted it and opened probate on the estate. The personal rep didn't even show up for the hearing because she wasn't aware of it, and she was appointed and had the authority, and the letters had been sent in the mail. And so there are some folks out there that basically push families into probate so they can reach out and try to buy their houses. I've only seen it happen in Colorado, but it doesn't sound like that's the case. The one you're working on, I would say, because there's also a trust in parallel, that attorney discovered when he was looking through the estate, he discovered something worth more than $100,000 that was not property of the trust. So he has to do both now.
I figured. All right, and then my second question, I've noticed a couple of personal reps that were listed are also the attorney's office that's in question. Is this normal?
Or usually that's a fiduciary in California. So it usually means nobody from the family stepped forward or the family got into a conflict. The judge sidelined everybody and said, we're going to have a fiduciary, you know, administer the estate. So those are really good ones to reach out to because it's a B2B transaction. It's just everyday business for them. There's no emotion involved. Their job is to get the file off their desk and get paid. So you definitely want to reach out to that person. That can be an evergreen source of referrals for you, just like an attorney. And if you want to learn more about that, you can actually join. What are you in Southern California?
Yeah.
Northern, Southern? Yeah. So around L.A., San Diego, like there are fiduciary groups, basically networking groups, where they meet once a month. It's an association. But you can pay like $325 for annual dues to be an affiliate member. You don't even have to be a fiduciary, but you can sit in on those meetings and find some way to bring value to them, like find some way to, you know, just give a presentation to say, you know, here's what we do in our real estate company to really provide value and attract business. And for you guys being willing to include me in this, I'd like to share my business model with you so you can consider building this in your own business. Now, we know when you have a really successful business plan, you can hand it to 100 people and maybe one of them will actually use it. So you get the perceived value of showing them behind the under the hood of your business, like, look what you could do too, but knowing that they're very unlikely to do it.
Right.
But you're gonna be pitching this as, let me show you how to do this in your business, and they're gonna look at it and go, that seems like too much work. Let's just send our deals to that guy, and you'll get the referrals off of it. So joining those fiduciary groups can get you in front of a lot of those people. Once a month.
We have one of our subs out there that's been with us since the beginning, Bill Bird, that has just made a career out of that. He's, last time I talked to him, yeah, he had made like $750,000 in 1 year. He started specializing in the fiduciaries, and they started sending him referrals. And then something that he didn't expect, he said a lot of the probate judges also handle divorce. He started getting referrals from judges on divorce cases. Because he was, yeah, the judge had seen him in front of him so many times on probate cases. So those are repeat.
That
those are repeat.
For, Roger
What's
Lisi
that?
Too. Roger,
yeah,
Lisi gets all kinds of divorce cases like that.
Yeah. So that's a great opportunity. Well, those are high value leads for sure.
I'll look up those fiduciary groups. In the meantime, you know, just curious, if I reach out to a personal representative and the, you know, it's listed as Jacobs Law Firm. Do I, you know, the pitch is obviously going to be a little bit different than when I'm talking to a regular personal rep.
It's going to be more like your attorney pitch. So,
okay,
you know, they're tasked with 75% of everything. An attorney is doing 25%. They still have to do the other 75%. So if you can show them a way to plug into your service, then they basically become a middleman to get paid for it. Your team will do all the work. The attorney is going to do the legal aspect. They're kind of just doing the accounting and being the middleman. So you can show them how you can take all of the workload off of their business, but they still get paid the same, and you only get paid for what you do. Your vendors get paid for what they do. So it's similar to the attorney conversation. You want to show them how your service directly complements theirs and is in everybody's service is in the best, putting the best interest of the estate first. And you can do these, you can shorten the timeline and increase the equity, by using the systems and team you have in place. And that's certainly of interest to them because they have an overwhelming amount of files. They don't give it 100% on any of them. So if you're showing them how to close those files more quickly and retain more equity for the estate, they should be all ears.
Got it. All right. Appreciate you guys.
Thank you, sir. Next up is phone number ending in 0883. How you doing, Jim?
Hey, Jim. Doing good, man. I've got a real simple one. I just saw your post yesterday about your wife and just wondering if she's still doing good. And, man, I've never heard of that happen before.
That was strange, but thank you. Yeah, she's doing great. Back, I say she's back to as normal as she was to start with, so she's back to normal.
Well, we can't have anything happen to her because she's going to handle all these short sales.
All the short sales. Yeah, right. she was back the next day. Thanks for asking, Jim.
Okay, good deal. Thanks, Brian.
Oh, that's it?
Hey, Jim. Nothing. Jim, before you go, I've got you on my calendar two times. I've got you at 3 to 4 and 4 to 5. Which of those are we doing?
It's 3 o'clock Central, so the 4 o'clock your time.
Okay. Thanks for that.
All right, Jim. Always good to hang in, everybody. Always good to talk to you.
Okay.
Next up is another familiar name in the panhandle of Florida, Dennis Spilonis. You're up next.
Hello there. I hope everybody's having a blessed day. I just got our credibility site up and running, and it looks really, really good. Just kind of wondering, what is the best way to market this website?
Well, direct mail is really the best way. Put a PS line in everything. Okay. That's the best. Just so you understand, the sites aren't built to index and rank and convert. They are credibility websites, so we want to kind of discreetly have something there where only the people who receive our marketing message can go do some due diligence on us. So it's not merely meant to rank on the first page of Google and drag in all kinds of leads, because we already know who the leads are. Our intent is to get those leads to our site, so it kind of becomes an extension of our letter and our reputation. So one of the best things you can do to add value to the site for the traffic that you're already getting there is do a really good job blogging. So go to the county court and learn what the judicial backlog is. Write a blog post about it. Go sit down and interview the probate clerk and do a video blog with her. Talk to local attorneys. Anything that you can think about, if I was a personal representative, where would my blind spots be? Those are great blog content posts. And the more you do that, the more SEO you'll have naturally, but also the more valuable information you will accumulate. So when people do come to your website and they see you in a picture or a video with the probate clerk they just met last week, they're going to like, do you have credibility then? They're like, well, here he is in the courthouse right where we were. This guy must know what he's doing. So anything that you can do, like I love video blogs. They do really well. And testimonials, like each time you help a family, make a blog post and tell the story, and then embed a testimonial video, and bring that to the front page. Like say, you can use widgets and actually bring your latest post up onto the front page of your website so people start to see that. So that's if you really want to add value to the traffic that you're already getting from the way we're getting it there, the blog is really the best thing you can do. Also, like about pages, like if you do it, like I recommend a lot of people go stand and wait for a quiet day, like a Sunday morning when there's no traffic, set up a tripod or have somebody video you. But stand in front of the county courthouse where you can, it's obvious where you are. And they've been there. They've had to go down there in the last 30 days, so it's something that's going to catch their attention. But stand in front of the county courthouse and tell your story, just like you would talk to the personal representative. Hey, my name's Chad. I'm standing here in Roanoke County. We have a service where once a month we come down here, meet with the probate clerk, find out which families are going through probate, and we proactively reach out because we know we can make such a huge difference. There's some FAQs below on this site. Please read through those. My number's above. Please give me a call. Let me know if there's any way we can help your family. And just a short video that goes on your about page. So things like that can just add a lot more value to the traffic. We pretty much use the direct mail to generate the traffic, and we don't want our competitors seeing it. We don't want it ranking on page one of Google. Anyways, that's my take on it.
Okay, so obviously put the with the website, the new website on there are letters.
Yes. So what I do is I put a PS line on every letter. PS, if you're not ready to talk to anyone just yet, but you'd like to learn more about us, go to domain.
Okay. Great.
And Chad,
appreciate
to Chad's point, to Chad's point, the PS is one of the most powerful marketing tools that I've ever used. Just adding it onto your emails, your letters, different things like that, listing out different ways that you can help people and different services that you offer. So if you're going to put a PS, yes, put the credibility website in line one of your PS. But you might, depending on whether your letter spells everything out that you offer, you might want to consider putting some of those into the PS as bullet points. I've had a lot of success that way.
Great. All right, thank you.
All right, excellent. Got three more in the queue. That should take us nicely up to the top of the hour. Next up is phone number ending in 5167. You're up next. Are you there, 5167? Unmute yourself. All right. 562 area code. One more time. Unmute yourself. Are you there? All right. Hit star 6 and hit 1 and jump back in the queue. We can't hear you. Chad, you're there, right?
Yeah, I was okay. Being quiet. I wanted you to do it like an umpire. You're out of here!
Funny, I was a semi-pro umpire in my younger days. You never do that. So, yeah, I could have given you a good, you're out of here, for sure. All right, next up is phone number ending in 2353. You're up next.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you, fortunately. Yes, sir.
Oh, great. Yes. My question is regarding, I've got a few situations where I've made contact with the PR, set the appointment, got over, met with the people, and attempted to, basically close on them to get the listing. I'm an agent and here in California. And, it's interesting, like on three different occasions, when I get there, I'll find the folks out cleaning up the yard or moving things out of the house, getting things in order. And I'm thinking maybe that I could get the listing. But they just kind of, give me the stall. They're not ready right now. They're just kind of doing things on their own. I try to offer help, with I have some clean out people. I have a great team of movers, and I try to offer my services, but, I get the stall. So, and this is, they don't really tell me, no, I'm not interested, because they did set the appointment, and I went out and visited with them, but I'm just wondering how can I, get them off the fence, and get them to move forward. Here's the other thing, though, Chad, I was going to say is they have petitioned for the administratorship, and I don't think that they actually have gotten it here in California because of the courts being having a moratorium. They have not. I don't think they've gotten their testamentary and acceptance for the administratorship yet.
Yeah. So, what market are you in?
California.
Yeah, but what city?
Los Angeles.
Yeah. So there's about a 4-month delay, it seems, in most Los Angeles courts. And that's one of the challenges we're going to face. Like, one of the things you can do is you can get a letter of intent. just so you can get some sort of a mental commitment. We all know an LOI is not worth the paper it's written on, but it is a very good first step, right? Like, they feel like they've made a commitment to you. So in this four-month period while they're waiting on their confirmation and their letters, you know, they might hear from 50 people. But if you found any way that you can to provide value to them other than listing the real estate, they're going to remember that. If you can get them to sign a letter of intent before you provide those services, just to say, you know, guys, listen, normally we engage, we put a strategy together, we move forward. And the way we protect our, you know, our work, because we don't ever get paid until we've done exactly what we promise, we just ask that you give us a commitment that we are actually going to get paid, compensated for the time we put into this, because when we dig in, it gets done. But in this environment, we can't do everything. What we can do is put things in place that help you guys get ready. So this is just a simple letter of intent that basically says, here's what help you need, and here's what I'm committed to providing for you. And one of the lines in that letter of intent says, you know, we intend to list the property with ABC Realty Brokerage at a future date, and yada, yada. But anyways, in their mind, you're still handing them a blue pen and saying, please sign. There's ten press hard. There's two. I brought two copies, but you walk away with something signed. They have something they remember they signed. So if competition comes in over that lag period, they're gonna be like, no, we've got it handled. We have a guy, and that's about the best you can do right now. My advice is, as far as finding ways to provide value to them, you know, you can inventory the property. You can, you know, use like the red, yellow, green sticker. You know, red is don't sell, the family's keeping. Yellow is donate. Green is sale. And then stage those things like in a garage or somewhere. You can do some things that will get them ready. So when they do get confirmation and have letters, they can go. They can move forward and sell. You know, and they'll be more prepared. So you can show that you're proactively helping them get more prepared. And The you can use the analogy of, you know, Disney World. They've been closed for 3 months, and you know the line is normally 10,000 people long in the morning when they open the gates. Well, the courts are even worse than that. So would you rather be at the front of that line or just getting off the tram whenever we get back on track? And you can kind of show them that you know, this. By doing nothing, they're just making it last even longer, even though it's got an unusual long delay now. And that's about all you can do right now. We're kind of at the mercy of the courts. And just my prediction is that the courts are going to be forced, whether they want to do it or not. They're struggling with local government budgets. The coffers are empty right now because the sales tax is so far down. But hopefully, as we reopen the economy, those taxes will replenish the funds, and they'll be able to afford to put a virtual court environment in place that will run parallel with your physical court environment, and it won't actually be a four-month delay. We'll be able to chew through it more quickly than that. That's our hope.
But the only other thing I was going to – go ahead, Chad. I was going to add something when you're done. Go ahead.
Just find any way you can to help them. See if you can get them to go to a letter of intent and stay engaged with them. That's the best we can do.
Yeah, and I was just going to add to that. If you can't get them to engage at all now, you did a good job getting them to agree to meet with you. I would just be extremely efficient on lead follow-up. I somebody like that, I'd probably call them or stop by every week until, you know, I used to do that with FSBOs. People would say to me, my God, are you going to call me every day? And I'd kind of kiddingly say, well, there's one way to stop that, you know. List your house with me, and you'll never see me again. Just make them laugh. I mean, but do an extremely good job of follow up and keeping in touch with them, even if it's just a 30-second check in once a week. Because I guarantee your competition, if anybody else got the appointment and they got put off like that, they're probably going to give up a lot sooner than you. So, you know, just be a bulldog at keeping in touch with them.
Yeah, Now, actually, in the metropolitan area of Los Angeles, we're restricted on any type of face to face. So, I'm actually now trying to stay away from that area. But My second question, I'm just wondering, has the script sort of changed a little bit? Or we kind of critiqued it for the ones that I am calling. It's like, well, I'm not doing anything because, the court is a shutdown with my script here. Not script, but as I kind of try to, homogenize my conversation to fit more with the COVID-19 situation. Is there any additional verbiage I could use to kind of, get them up off the fence here?
So the last two role play calls, we kind of retrofitted everything to fit this environment. So I would say listen to the April. I think we did it in March as well. But
yeah,
listen,
March and
listen,
April.
Listen to the last two role play calls, and you'll get some ideas of some of the suggestions we've made of how to make it a virtual appointment, how to prepare them virtually without contact, how to convince them to price ahead of the market, because we're very likely to see price corrections. But that in your specific market, you don't want to shine too much light on the fact that the market, that they stand to lose equity, because until they get their letters, we can't do anything about that other than rent the property. They can put a tenant in there and let cover their cost. But they also need to understand the risks associated with that, with a seemingly never-ending moratorium on eviction. That could, it could make their situation worse if they don't properly screen tenants. So,
yep.
It's just some of the things I mentioned in those role plays where I'm using kind of economic and the economic environment to create urgency to get them to move out of the probate quicksand, get their house on the market, and we can do it all virtually. Just be careful if you're applying that same pressure in your market, because if they don't have the letters, you're going to create more stress for them because they can't do anything for 4 months. They can't sign with you. You can't help them. So just be aware of that as you listen to that. That's kind of blanket advice that works in most every market. But you're in one of those where probate's very common. You have massive, even though you have 10 courthouses, they seem to be massively backed up. So.
And Chad, in my coaching
calls.
Yeah, in my coaching calls, I've had a couple people tell me they have effectively used that Disney World FastPass example. That's something that Disney World or Disneyland, it's something that people can really relate to, and it makes sense. So that's just a kind of a shortcut answer that really does work. All right, well, possibly last up this week is phone number ending in 9942. You're up.
Hey, hi. How are you?
Great, Tom. How about you?
You hear me all right?
Yes, sir.
I'm good. Hey, the reason I jumped on was because I was listening to you talking about blogs, and I have a website set up, Lehigh Valley Probate Services, and we're in the same situation as the last caller. We can't visit with people at all. We're not allowed to do any what they call real estate related activity because we're not considered essential. And it seems like a good time to do things like go out and blog, or weather's clearing up and stuff. Where would I put that in my website? Because I don't really see a spot there for it.
Did we build your site?
Yes.
So if there's not a blog component in the menu, you don't have a blog or news or anything like that?
It's not turned on by default.
Okay.
I have home about
so we can
propane.
we can help you add that. Like, we just need to add a post page, and then you'll be able to do it.
Okay. Because that sounds like a great idea.
So if you just reach out to call the main number or email support at All the Leads, and one of our team members will get you taken care of.
Sounds good. Okay, and then I would just post to that like I would. I have a number of different websites, and most of them have a blog component that I can just put stuff up. Or is there another way that they would do that?
No, you just go in and click create new post. Put in your title, put in, like, build it. Have you used WordPress before?
I think I tried to use WordPress. It confused me, so I stopped using it. And just
okay. Well, there's tons and tons of video tutorials. You can just go to YouTube and say, you know, how to write your first WordPress blog post, and a million things will pop up. So it's an open source community, so there's lots of good information out there. But once we get it set up for you, you can watch a couple 5-minute tutorials, and if it sounds like you have experience on other web platforms, it's really not that difficult. You'll roll right through it.
Very good. All right.
Chad, do you have to be off at 2, or should we take one more call?
No, I'm good this week. I'm okay.
All right. All right. Next up is phone number ending in 5167.
Hello. You guys hear me?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Hey, this is Jeff Leonard from SoCal. How's it going, guys? So I wanted to touch on with some marketing strategies. Anybody having any success with creating data from, you know, from data sources and creating custom audiences and social media platforms like Facebook, just promoting the services, the importance of, you know, a trust and a will, and maybe trying to get some business for an attorney that you partnered up with. If they don't have a trust, there are some things to be concerned with if you're planning for, you know, whatever content you could get to create curiosity. I was just wondering.
Well, you're making your money on real estate, right?
Yeah.
Yes, I would recommend, so yes, Facebook can be really effective if you're very local about it, which is something we tried to do for you, and it just doesn't scale well without kind of hyper-local creative. So there's a couple of mastermind calls from earlier this year where we've talked about this in long form, but essentially you take your probate list, you go in and create a custom audience, you match on first name, last name, address, phone number, email. Because of all the data we have, we can usually get 85% or higher match rates, which is phenomenal if you've ever dealt with custom audiences. Like we get incredibly good match rates. So that becomes your audience. What I find to be most effective, video ads do really well. So come up with just a short, like really simple, you know, solid color background. Are you the executor administrator of an estate? And then fly that out and put something back in. You know, did you know there's a team here in the community that helps families in this county? Just little simple statements, and you want that to be, you know, the first four seconds, you want them to be able to identify with it. That's why I'm suggesting, are you the administrator of an estate? Have you know, is probate stress creating stress for your family? And then every 2 seconds you can change it. Make it a 15-second or a 30-second video spot that's really simple, but it stands out. They're going to be seeing it anywhere from 3 to 15 times a day because your audience is so small, our impressions are really high. So they're going to, even if it's just a black background with white text flying in, kind of like think of the Got Milk logo, how simple that is. But it's eventually they're going to be like, what in the world? How do they know that I'm going through this? And they'll click Learn More. Then land them on your website where the idea I told you earlier, stand in front of the courthouse and talk directly to them like you would if you bumped into, if someone had referred them to you. And you say, hey, my name's Chad. I'm standing here at the Roanoke County Courthouse. We just met with the clerk to find out which families were actually going through this month. The reason you saw our ad and the reason you're here is because we're trying to reach out to you because we know we can make a big difference in your family's experience in going through this. And our two primary goals are to help you keep every dollar you can and to get this done as quickly as possible with as little stress as possible. A couple ways we can move forward from here. If you look right below the video, there's a link to my calendar. You can click that right now, and I'll call you. There's a phone number above me in the header of this site. You can call that right now, and I'll answer. Or you can fill out the form below, and I'll get to you through email or however. And give them calls to action in that video. Give them permission to look around the site. And what you'll find, like, we were able to get, you know, we built tools where we actually created the audiences for you, managed all that. and we were able to get lots of clicks and traffic, but without having that custom video, like the landing page, it was just not converting like it does if you do it. And trying to coach people to do video is like trying to throw a hot tub party for cats. Like, it's never going to happen. So if you can have the discipline to do, you know, to do that video yourself, we're giving you the recipe. Like, that's pretty much what it takes to convert. And give them multiple calls to action. You know, they can hit you on the calendar, they can hit a web form, or they can call you directly. Give them three different ways to get to you. And then push that out and let it run. And each month, when you get a new list, you wanna copy and paste your new list needs to go into the same audience, because the larger your audience becomes, the cheaper your CPR is, your cost per result. So it's you're better off to have 1,000 people in an audience than 300 people in an audience. A lot of people think that if there's only 300, it's going to focus my budget. It's actually not. Once you get above an audience size of 1,000, Facebook optimizes your ad, and it becomes more efficient, so your CPR actually goes down. So what we found is, really, you should start your budget at $250 or more per month. And try to keep get your audience as big as possible. And what we did is we would drop off at month 13, we would drop off. So each month we would add your new probate leads to your Facebook audience. And then on month 13, you'll add your new list and take off your first list. So you're lopping off that 13-month-old list, and you start to phase them out after a year. But we saw on average impressions of about, you know, across all users and all markets, we had about an average of 12 impressions daily on these campaigns, which, you think about that, that's like sending 12 postcards a day. You get 12 of those brand impressions, 12 opportunities for them to click on that. And you can get it for pennies. Like, it's not very expensive, because it's nobody's competing with you. You know, you run an ad for buyer leads in the real estate space, and it's your cost per result goes sky high, or your lead qualities, they're just junk leads. Where here you have a little tiny audience with no one else marketing to them. So it's a really good X factor if you figure it out. There's a handful of people in the whole country that have actually done it. So it's, especially in competitive markets like yours, it can really make a big difference for you if you get it right.
All right. Well, I think the biggest nugget right now is what you talked about, and how to present your message in front of the courthouse. That those types of tactics alone are huge for everybody listening.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Thank you.
Well, when you get your campaign up, reach out and if it's working for you, I'd like to capture you, like what your experience has been, to share with everybody if you're willing, because okay. I've encouraged many, many, many people to do this, but very few people ever get it done. So if you go take action and get it done, let's do a case study and show everybody else how easy it is.
Okay. Right on. Thank you, Chad. You guys, thank you.
All right, guys. Another great call. I want to end this call like I've ended all 277 calls previously. I want to thank each of you for being here today. We had a great attendance. I want to particularly thank those who actively participated, and I want to challenge each of you, take one idea, one thought, one thing that inspired you on today's call, go out and put it into practice, and come back and share your results with the group next week. Make it a great week, and we will talk to you same time next Thursday. Stay healthy, take care, we'll talk to you soon, guys.